You're recording.
We're recording. Want to call this meeting to order. Mind everybody, please turn off or mute your electronic devices. And we have Ms. Frost on hearing by phone. Victoria, would you call the roll call, please?
Yes, Dr. Byrne. Ms. Craver.
Here.
Ms. Frost.
Here.
Dr. Heinrich. Dr. James.
Here.
Mr. Logie.
Here.
Ms. Solomon.
Here.
Dr. Wright. We have quorum.
Quorum, start off with our section two, the initial investigative reviews. Let's start off with case 2199. Tracy, would you read us the summary?
Case 2199, the proponents are Gil and Chevy Holland. The respondent is Kim Knowles, ABM. On January 15th, 2021, Scooby, a 10-year-old male, miniature pincher, was presented to respondent on referral from the primary care veterinarian for a neurological consult. Diagnostics were performed and revealed the dog's multiple chronic cervical disc herniations. Respondent recommended medical management, and if the dog did not improve, surgical intervention could be considered. The dog was discharged with gabapentin, prednisone, and prednisone. The dog did well initially. On February 1st, 2021, respondent recommended extending the prednisone therapy another 2 weeks due to complaints and concerns of pain and the dog not acting himself. On February 8th, 2021, complaints reported the dog was anorexic and vomiting. It was recommended to discontinue the prednisone and have the dog seen by a veterinarian. The dog was presented to an emergency facility where he was in diabetic ketoacidosis. The dog was hospitalized for treatment. On February 14th, 2021, the dog was transferred to an internal medicine specialist for possible head tube placement. Based on the evaluation of the dog and the guarded prognosis, the dog was humanely euthanized. And the committee recommended possible violation of the Veterinary Practice Act. It was moved and seconded. The board find ARS 3222-3211 gross negligence, failure to communicate with the pet owners to discuss their concerns regarding the condition of the dog after respondents recommended treatment. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-1 with Dr. Butler opposed.
Okay. And we do have the respondent in council.
Good morning.
Good morning. Please state your names for the record.
Kim Knowles.
And David Stoltz, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Knowles.
Thank you. I give you up to 5 minutes to address the floor.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the investigative committee's concerns. Just in terms of my background, I have been a practicing veterinarian for 39 years, and for the past 21 years, I'm one of a small number of board-certified neurologists practicing at the Veterinary Neuro Center. Our practice is exclusively a referral-based practice, and this was such a referral case. So Scooby was a 10-year-old male neutered miniature pincher that I initially saw on 1/15/21. He was a referral from Jock Rawls and Joshua Marion for a progressive deterioration over the past 2.5 weeks in his ability to walk. And the investigative committee had no concerns at all regarding the medical workup, but apparently misunderstood communications or the extent of our practice's subsequent communications following that visit. Following the appointment with Scooby on 1/15, there were multiple follow-up communications with the client that were facilitated by our client service representatives, which is standard protocol for our practice. If you look at the communication records in this case, you will see that there was no request for a telephone follow-up call or recheck until the phone call of 2/8/21. On 2/8, I was advised that Scooby's condition had deteriorated, and I recommended that he either be evaluated at his regular veterinarian or with us. If I had been notified sooner than 2/8/21 that the owner either wanted to talk to me or that his condition had deteriorated, I would have contacted them immediately. But neither of those things happened in the 3-week interval between 1/15 and 2/8. Here is what happened during that 3-week period, and it's documented in the medical record. On Saturday, 1/16, we left a voicemail requesting an update from the owner. On Tuesday, 1/18, we relayed a laboratory test to the owner, and the owner had no questions and reported that Scooby was doing well. On Friday, 1/29, we received a voicemail from Ms. Holland that she had discontinued the gabapentin and that Scooby appeared off balance in the morning. I responded the same day, and the owner was told that the balance issues were likely related to the cervical disc issue that I had been treating him for the past 2 weeks. And I had recommended that he stay on prednisone at 2.5 milligrams per day for 2 weeks, then reduce the dose to 1.25 milligrams per day for 2 weeks, then 1.25 milligrams every other day for 10 treatments. And I also authorized a refill of prednisone. On Monday, 2/1, the owner indicated that since she had reduced the prednisone, it appeared that Scooby was painful and she wanted to know if it was okay to restart the gabapentin. In response, I said it was definitely okay to restart the gabapentin, and I called a refill of that into a compounding pharmacy. So on Monday, 2/8/21, this is where everything appeared to change. This was the time when the owner called and reported that Scooby had been vomiting all week. And on Saturday, randomly all week, and on Saturday he was vomiting nonstop. The owner requested a recheck. I responded immediately that the prednisone should be stopped and that he either come to us or his regular veterinarian. The choice was left up to the owner where they wanted to take Scooby, and ultimately they chose an ER facility. Finally, I would like to say that I'm truly sad about the outcome of this case, and I feel very badly for the owners of Scooby. Anytime there's an adverse outcome in one of my cases, I take the opportunity to reflect on that case. I look for ways that I might have improved my communication so that I can be the best veterinarian I can be. In retrospect, based on the information that was relayed to me, I failed to see how I could have done anything differently in this case that would have changed the outcome. And I'd also like to point out that given the caseload at the Veterinary Neuro Center and other specialty practices, we have to delegate routine follow-up to our staff. Otherwise, we wouldn't have time to practice veterinary medicine or treat our patients. We do depend on our staff to relay accurate messages and trust that they relay any concerns a client may have to us in a timely fashion. I believe this was done in this case. I responded to every communication from Scooby's owner that I received either immediately or the same day. There were two calls, one on 1/26 and the other on 2/1, that indicated he was having a relapse of pain, balance, and coordination issues, which were consistent with his cervical disc disease and what I was treating him for the previous 2 weeks. It was medically appropriate to respond to that concern by refilling the prednisone and gabapentin because it had helped him in the past. When I did receive a message on 2/8 that things had changed and that he was clinically ill, I responded immediately and recommended that he be brought to his regular veterinarian or to us. He was not brought back to us. So in summary, I do not feel I was negligent in my care or follow-up for Scooby. I have medically managed many intervertebral disc patients in the past the same way with success. And I honestly don't believe anyone could have anticipated the extreme and what I consider to be atypical adverse outcome in this case. Thank you.
Thank you.
Step back. I'm not here for room to complain. Would you please both state your name for the record?
Chevy Holland.
And you?
McGill.
Do you both need 5 minutes?
No.
No, I'm going to speak on our behalf.
I'll give you 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. Today marks 7 months and 1 day since we lost our beloved family member, our dear dog Scooby, due to gross negligence. During the investigative session, a number of issues came up that I want to discuss here today. It was mentioned, as Dr. Knowles just said, that she knew nothing about Scooby's deteriorating condition until February 8th, the day that he was admitted to the VDR, never to return home again. However, I had called a number of times prior to that date, requesting Scooby be seen. Finally, on January 29th, when I finally got through to a live human, the records show that the tech asked Dr. Knowles how to respond to my request for an appointment or additional medication or what should be done, and her response was, "I assume it is related to the cervical disc issue." I assume, I'm no doctor, I'm not a vet, but as young as the third grade, I learned that when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. And certainly in the medical arena, there is no room for assumptions because they can have fatal consequences as they did in this very case. Additionally, Dr. Knowles can't argue she knew nothing about Scooby's deteriorating condition until February 8th when she had this very conversation with her tech on January 29th per her medical records. On that same medical entry, it also notes that I had called and said I had left a voicemail earlier in the week, and there is absolutely no record of any such voicemail, and yet in the voicemail transcripts from their office, it shows a transcript of a voicemail from me on January 26th. So I'm not sure how believable all of the information recorded here, and it may be her office's fault or her company that she hires to do this, but clearly it's not that accurate what they've recorded here, and maybe they didn't record that I had requested an appointment multiple times with Dr. Knowles. When I called and I spoke to this tech, I didn't say that he was off balance. I said something was off. I'm originally from Australia. We may have some different vernacular, and it's possible that this tech, who doesn't know much about medicine, understood whatever commentary I had said is off, to be off balance, and that's how she reported it back to Dr. Knowles. I understand that Dr. Knowles hearing that would think that's related to his back issue, but perhaps if Dr. Knowles had spoken to me directly, she would have heard me say something's off, not he's off balance, because I described him as off balance before he was seen by Dr. Knowles when he literally couldn't walk. He was able to walk at this point, just something wasn't right. And that's why I was requesting an appointment. You heard about her expertise. She's been in practice for almost 40 years. Dr. Knowles is an expert in her field. Our firm belief is that had she just seen Scooby or even simply spoken to me directly on the phone after I called so many times, she would have realized right away that there was something else going on that was unrelated to his back, and she could have caught it in time. Both Dr. Knowles and his general vet had commented that Scooby was in perfect health besides for his back issue. Had Dr. Knowles taken the time to see him, instead of fielding questions for my three-year-old, still today, asking where her best friend has gone, Scooby might still be here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me step back. We have Dr. James, you're the lead on this one. Before you get started, let the record show we have Dr. Wright in attendance now, but he's going to recuse from this case. So we'll start on the next case.
Right. So in looking at case 2199, I mean, I certainly, hearing both sides, you know, help clarify a few things, but I still feel like I have some questions that warrant a little bit more investigation, I guess. The timing and what was said and who said what isn't matching up. So we have a little he said, she said kind of thing going on. So I think at this point, I would make the motion that we move case 2199 to an informal.
Second that.
There's a motion on the floor and a second to move 2199 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? If none spoke, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2191 will move to an informal. Next up, we have case 21108. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes, case 21-108, independent executive brewer, the respondent is W. Rented as a DM. December 29, 2020, a wife, a 13-year-old drug cross building, was visited by a respondent of our dental employee. A dental equalization was performed and the dental was extracted due to a sagittal fracture. The socket was flushed and fresh material and flagella were placed to prevent infection and food packing. On January 5th, 2021, respondent visited the horse who did not eat. Respondent examined the horse. He was sedated, the impression web was removed, and there were no signs of infection. The horse was treated with antibiotics and an NSAID. On January 7th, 2021, respondent visited the horse. He was unable to stand due to flaccid paralysis. Due to the horse's grave prognosis, he was unable to recover. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded for a fine of ARS 3220-3383, minor records violations that are routine entries into a medical record that did not affect the diagnosis or care of an animal. These included failure to examine the horse prior to surgery, extraction of the tooth, and not documenting in the medical record the baby dying flesh, the nerve block, the flagellum placement, and penicillin concentration. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, we have no respondent. Mr. Spool, statement, monitoring. And complainant is here. Would you like to address the board?
I have to say that what I just heard, I didn't know a lot of that stuff. I didn't, you just said that Dusty Prentice applied antibiotics to the dental plug, and nowhere did she indicate that, but I just want to state that up front. The investigative committee's recommendation does not address Dr. Prentice's multiple acts of medical and professional negligence, which caused a healthy draft horse that she indicated was very healthy when she was there, with nothing but a common tooth and infection, and it was an infection, and it was clearly an infection. They noted how bad it smelled. She pulled out the tooth. She indicated that it looked like it was apically infected, and she did not give him antibiotics. Dusty initially noted around the 6th that Goliath's infection was out of control, but on the final day, she determined that he was suffering from botulism. The clinical signs of botulism were not present, and even a cursory review of the facts and literature showed that this makes no sense. So what did cause his death? There are at least 7 examples of negligence that I would like to identify. First, broad spectrum antibiotics should have been given immediately when Goliath's infected tooth was pulled on December 29th. This is what Dusty did for my mayor on previous occasions, but it wasn't done for Goliath. We all know because the mouth is a particularly dirty and susceptible to infection, it's contrary to accepted vet practices to withhold antibiotics, period. If it weren't for this one negligent act, Goliath would be alive today. Second, accepted practices and protocol when using a dental plug is to fill the tooth socket with antibiotics and reevaluate in 2 weeks. Nowhere did she identify that she filled with antibiotics, local, though you just indicated she said she did. Not only was the record shows that the tooth socket was not filled with antibiotics, but Dusty's follow-up was scheduled for 1 month later. Without antibiotics and no follow-up for a month, if an infection started, by the way, it was already there, it could turn very ugly before anything could be done about it. This was a deviation from accepted practice and protocol and constitutes negligence in my mind. Third, Dusty should have ordered blood work after pulling the infected tooth. She could have done complete blood count, serum amyloid A, or something else to identify the cause and degree of his infection, which was clear. It was the reason she was called out. No blood work was done. This is a deviation from accepted practices and protocol and constitutes negligence in my mind. Fourth, Dusty should have ordered blood work when she returned for an emergency visit on January 5th when she treated Goliath for an infection. Blood work would have identified the cause and degree of infection and could identify the antibiotics that she gave on that date, on the 5th, would target the infection. Fifth, Dusty failed to inform me that she had given intravenous antibiotic treatment on the 5th, and she neglected to relay an appropriate level of caution or concern for his condition. She left the impression that the bone fragments that she removed were the issue. I thought everything was fine. She threw me the Uniprom. Good to go. She didn't say anything additional like, you know, this horse is, you know, we've got an infection going on. He's behind the curve. Keep your eye on him. Sixth, because of the infection, Goliath was at risk for systemic inflammation response syndrome and potentially sepsis, which we know is a leading killer of equines. Accepted practice and protocols to recognize this, that his situation could be serious emergency to be treated with intravenous antibiotics, fluids, anti-inflammatory drugs, etc. But Dusty didn't attempt aggressive treatment for the infection, possible SIRS or sepsis, or relay the concern for it. This is contrary to accepted practice and protocol, and I believe it constitutes negligence. Seventh, established practices for identifying a case of botulism is dependent on the presence of clinical signs and the absence of all other possibilities. Goliath did not show clinical signs of botulism, and even a cursory review of the facts shows that that makes no sense. Goliath had only gone recumbent upon Dusty's arrival on January 7th. Otherwise, he was alert. He never showed signs of respiratory distress, swallowing issues, no swallowing issues, no drooling, and no weakness of his forelimbs or elsewhere except the hind legs. Dusty made no attempt to rise him after a period of rest, no attempt to conduct a thorough health assessment, and she made no attempt to conduct diagnostic field tests for botulism, as the tongue test, the tongue stress test, or the brain test. Bottom line, Goliath had a tooth infection on December 29th, and he was not properly treated. His infection got out of control, and Dusty, as a veterinary profession that I trusted and relied on, was negligent throughout the process in multiple ways. I respectfully request that you find that this vet be found negligent in multiple ways. I fully understand that this won't bring back my person, but it might protect others from unnecessary pain and loss. Thank you for your careful deliberation.
Thank you. Dr. Chains, you were the lead on this one.
So in looking at case 21-108, this is a tough case because our medical records are fairly brief, and so some of the things that I think were done were not documented, and it makes it a little hard to tell exactly what happened and when. I think there's, concern around whether the use of antibiotics right away would have changed the outcome, and I don't think there's a way of knowing that. Certainly, it looks like there was an infection that happened after the dental, but I don't think that we necessarily had enough, at least documented in the medical record, to say that there was an infection there that warranted the use of antibiotics right away. She did pack it and included antibiotics in that. So I don't see anything. We hear about odor and that, but at the time of the actual dental, we don't have that documented. In fact, even on the follow-up, it specifically stated in the response, no odor. So, it's really hard looking back on it and trying to figure out what happened when, but ultimately in the care, I think, the vet followed up, certainly thought at that point there was an infection, started antibiotics, things continued to get worse, and got worse pretty quick. I don't think we know for sure what the ultimate outcome was because we didn't actually test for Clostridium. And so I just feel like there's a lot of unknown. I think the biggest issue I have with this case is the lack of documentation and medical records of what was actually going on. Any other comments before I move on?
Yeah. So I'm more concerned, the suggested violation I don't think is adequate. At least possibly not adequate from what I'm seeing here. ARS 3222B3 for minor records violations that are routine entries in the medical record that do not affect the diagnosis or care. The source is dead. We have in the records the missing flagyl entry, saying that it was packed in there in two different areas from what I can see. Like, everything's documented charge-wise for betadine flushes, all these kinds of things, and then we missed two pills. Okay, maybe we missed it on the accounting side, but it also wasn't addressed in the actual medical record side, which makes me wonder, did we miss it twice, or was it not done? And then after the fact, we're saying, oh yeah, it was done. I mean, that's more concerning to me more so than a minor medical records violation. That'd be more like maybe we missed a temperature or something like that, or even the pre-surgical anesthetic exam. Okay, maybe we didn't enter that stuff and it was still done, who knows, but that's just, I don't know, something's not meshing with me here, and I have a lot more questions. I think they deserve a little bit more investigation here.
So, in the case of 21-108, I would make a motion that we move this case to an informal to get more information regarding what was done and documentation.
I'll second that.
A motion on the floor, a second, to move case 21-108 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? I guess I'll throw it out there that I'm glad you went that route. If you didn't, I was going to ask you to anyway. Because we didn't talk about vaccination, or when you're talking about neurological signs, what about rabies? I mean, that's something that you certainly have to consider. So I'm glad we went to an informal. Any other discussion? Say vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 21-108 to move to informal. Next up, we have 21-106. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please? Is it the same summary for both?
Yes, it is. It's a two-pack there. We're going to review together. It's the same complaint, and the summary is the same. So case 21-106 and case 21-107, the complainant is Carrie and Karen Tapp, and the respondent in case 21-106 is Rose Jensen, DVM, and the respondent in case 21-107 is Melissa Miller, DVM. On March 12, 2021, Obi, an 11-month-old male Labrador, was presented to respondent as a walk-in after running away for a short period of time. Complainants were unsure what happened, but when the dog returned, he had lacerations on his right hind leg. Respondent examined the dog. Although there was no way to know what exactly happened to the dog, respondent suspected the dog could have been hit by a car or got the foot caught in fencing. Diagnostics were recommended and approved by the witness. Due to changes in the lungs, the respondent elected to sedate the dog instead of using a general anesthetic to suture the wounds. No obvious fractures were noted. After the dog's wounds were sutured and leg bandaged, the dog recovered and was discharged that evening with an antibiotic and an NSAID and pain medication. On March 10, 2021, the dog was presented to TAVR for a recheck. Complainant reported that the dog had been running and swimming that day. The other dog in the household had removed the original bandage that was placed on the dog, therefore complainants re-bandaged the leg. The dog was evaluated, the hematoma was present at the incision site, and the leg was re-bandaged. Complainant was instructed to limit the dog's activity and not allow the dog to swim. And for case 21-106, the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0. And in case 21-107, the committee also concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
All right, we have both respondents here. Is that correct?
Yes.
And would you both like to speak?
I would just like my record to stand, but I'm here if you have any questions for me.
Usually we don't have questions at this process. But, and you are?
I'm Rose Jensen.
Rose Jensen. And Dr. Miller, would you address the board?
No, thank you, sir. Okay.
All right, so both are here. Neither is addressing the board. There is no complaint at present. Looks like no council monitoring. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead.
Yes, thank you. Can I start with 21-107?
Sure.
Okay. So 21-107, I just wanted to ask for that. Is this because Dr. Miller is the premise license holder?
No.
The complainant just elected to file that complaint against Dr. Miller as well.
Okay, so in this case, I don't see that Dr. Miller stated, so I would recommend the dismiss 21-107 with no violation is my motion.
Second.
Motion on the floor and a second to dismiss 21-107. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 21-107 is dismissed.
Okay, and then in the case of 21-106, there was a lot to review. The initial complaint was a lot all by itself, and there was a really, it seemed like a hyper focus on what happened with the dog, and veterinary medicine, and we can tell you, oftentimes, you know, veterinarians just able to to deduce, you know, from signs what happened. And then there was a hyper focus on fractures, and then on why or why not, you know, why it wasn't placed, but my notes were really focused around compliance after reading all of the veterinarians who had seen the patient statements. And so, really, I mean, looking at all the information and you know, reviewing not only complaints, but all of those doctors' records, I make a motion to dismiss this with no violation.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 21-106 with no violation. Is there any further discussion? I just like to point out that how could the veterinarian possibly know what happened to the dog if he didn't know that came to dog? One. And then absolutely no compliance when they patch the dog up, give specific instructions, and there is no attempt made to follow those instructions at all.
Well, and it was almost like it was the vet's fault that they had all these things they had to comply with in the first place, you know? It was like they were just put out by the things that they had to do for their own pet right away, so.
Yeah, so, anyway, I'm just a little frustrated complaint didn't show up for the investigative review, and they're not here today either. So. Any other discussion on 106? All in favor dismissing case 21-106, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? That motion passes. 21-106 dismissed. Clear those two. All right, so we'll go back up to 21-100. Tracy, would you read this as a summary?
This is where I have to get Dr. Noel on the phone for.
Tracy, would you read the summary, please?
Sure. Case 21-100, the complainant is Rick and Judy Untersa, and the respondent is Jessica Noel, DVM. On January 2nd, 2021, Ariel, an 8-year-old intact female chihuahua, was presented to the respondent for anorexia, vomiting, and lethargy. The dog was diagnosed with a pyometra, and surgery was recommended after the dog was stabilized. That evening, surgery was performed and the dog recovered. Complainants were advised that the dog had peritonitis. Additionally, the dog had regurgitated pre- and post-surgery, therefore, there was a chance of aspiration pneumonia. The following day, the dog was doing well, but would not be discharged until she ate. On January 4th, 2021, respondents associate noted the dog had increased respiration rate. Diagnostics revealed suspected aspiration pneumonia. The dog began to vomit blood and shock of gut was a concern. Continued hospitalization was recommended, but complainant declined and elected to stay with adult trauma. On January 11th, 2021, the dog was presented to respondent's associate from Humane Euthanasia. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue of no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
We have the respondent on the phone. Would you please state your name for the record?
Yes, my name is Jessica Knowles.
Thank you. And I'll give you, you can have 5 minutes to address the board.
Great. Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to start by extending my sincere condolences to the undersigned. I understand that losing a beloved pet like Ariel is very difficult. And I want to emphasize that I made all my medical decisions based on Ariel's best interest and with the undersigned's approval every step of the way. As you may know, I was on a fixed salary at that time, and therefore I do not receive any financial benefit from Ariel care. Thank you, everyone, for your time and support.
Thank you. Dr. Wright, you were the lead on this one.
Yes, thank you. So going through and looking at everything, I mean, unfortunately, these kinds of cases are the most frustrating and most sad ones that we can see, because when it comes down to it, I mean, this dog should honestly still be around. But the fact that it's not is not the fault of the veterinarian. It's because this dog was not spayed earlier in life at a more appropriate time. Pyometra, once it happens, the dogs are critical. I mean, we say don't let the sun set on a pyometra for a reason. I mean, dogs are going to die from these things. And if the dog would have been spayed earlier in life, it would have been a lot cheaper, a lot safer, and the dog would probably still be alive. But this is not the fault of the veterinarian. The veterinarian did everything she could to try and save this pet in a very critical state. So I would make a motion that this case is dismissed with no violation.
Second.
Motion on the floor is second to dismiss case 21-100. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. And 2100 is dismissed. Next up is 21110. Tracy, would you read some, or can you get somebody on the phone?
Yes, I need to get Ms. Notoriety.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome.